Hare Krishna, everyone. You are listening to the number one Hare Krishna podcast in the world with your host, Nam Ras, the late morning program. I'm here with Sutapa Prabhu. Sutapa Prabhu, thank you for joining me.
Nam Ras, it's an honor. I really thank you for allowing me to share something with you. And thank you for what you do. Your podcast is like my morning exercise listening, you know.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Well, Sutapa Prabhu, like we were talking about this before we went live, but the first time I met you was at the Pandavasena retreat in 2003, and we haven't really spoken so much since then, although I saw you here and there and stuff, but you're a very busy person, engaged in service and all things at the Bhaktivedanta Manor, but and now you're going on to do amazing things, and I just want to pick your brain about the whole thing. But let's start off with how did you get in touch with Krishna consciousness? Let's start there.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of coming to the temple since a young age because, you know, from a Hindu background and right, so on and so forth. And I guess it was about 15 when I really had a hunger to know more about spirituality, about my religion, as it were,
right,
and just explore more. So I remember going to the library and picking up a few copies of the Gita, not Prabhupada's Gita, and just having this hunger to learn. And somehow or other, they didn't resonate with me. But then I got a copy of Prabhupada's Gita when I was, 15, 16. And that was the beginning of the journey, I think, really. It was kind of a special year. It was 1996, and it was Prabhupada's centennial.
Right.
There was, like, loads of things going on at the temple and with Pandavasena, the youth group. And, I just started coming into the temple and like firing questions at the devotees about the Gita. And that was the beginning of the journey.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And so you became, when did you become a full-time brahmachari?
So yeah, I kind of begun my journey about 15, 16 years old. And then I kind of got in touch with the youth, as I said, the Pandavasena, the youth group. And it's kind of relevant to today's topic, but what really struck me about them was that they really believed in what they were doing. You know, like, you know what it's like when you show the devotees that you're a little bit interested in Krishna consciousness, they just like, they jump on you, you know? You know, they were like ringing me left, right, and center to come like to every program, and they were just like checking up on me to see like how I'm doing, to make sure I haven't like blooped or anything.
Right.
And I was like seeing their like enthusiasm for me to take up Krishna consciousness. Like, what occurred to me is like there could only be two possibilities here. Either they think I'm really, really special, or what they're doing is really, really special.
Right.
That's what occurred to me. It could only be one of the two things. And later on, I realized that they do this for everyone because they really believe in what they're doing. And that was fascinating for me because it was like, I guess in my life, I was looking for something that I could really believe in and give myself to. And Krishna consciousness, really, I saw that in the devotees. So, yeah, so 16, 17, I got more involved, and then I went to university. The hunger was just growing. I kind of lost my interest in university a little bit after 1 year. The devotees convinced me to finish. And as soon as I finished, I practically, joined as a full-time brahmachari at that time. So, like, 21. And that was the beginning of the life of orange, as they say, or the life of a monk.
Yeah. Can you briefly explain what Pandavasena is? Because I'm not sure everyone will know what but it's very prominent. I mean, all over the world, actually, there's in, you know, parts of Pandavasena, but it started all in England, right?
Yeah, the Pandavasena are incredibly dynamic. Like some of you may know the history of when the manor was trying to, or was being closed down, or, you know, there were campaigns to close the manor down. And as part of that campaign, the youth kind of rallied together, and it was like the Pandava Sena, you know, like fighting the battle of Kurukshetra. So they were quite an inspired bunch, a revolutionary bunch, and they were real missionaries. And I think I was really fortunate to begin my spiritual life associating with them, because I guess a little bit of their spirit seeped into my own heart. And and then they've continued on since then with their revolutionary spirit, with their amazing and ingenious ways of sharing Krishna consciousness with the world. And they do many, many amazing things now.
You're still like affiliated with them in the sense of you are like one of the senior members who now counsels the younger members and things.
Yeah, I try to help out in whatever way I can. Yeah, it's I just find their energy amazing and their ingenuity amazing. So yeah, still involved and still trying to contribute.
Definitely. Wonderful. Let's talk about the topic. So the title, so for those of you who don't know, Suta Paprabhu is on the sannyas list, what we call an ISKCON, the sannyas list. So those who are going to take the sannyas order, they put on this list, and a number of years go by, and then they're given sannyas. So I found that really fascinating, and I wanted to just talk about sannyas and talk about how that works, really, like in ISKCON particularly. I know in other institutions it's different, but speaking about ISKCON specifically, tell us a little bit about like how did you decide to do that, or did someone say, hey, this might be a good idea for you? Talk us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I guess before we begin talking about sannyas, just to kind of preface it, which is like the title that we came up with today. Because Nam Rashji, he texted me over and he said, why don't we like talk about you taking sannyas?
Yeah.
And I kind of flipped it on you, Namras, and I said, yeah, perhaps it's not so much about taking sannyas, but it's about marrying the mission.
Yeah, love it.
And I think it's an important point, because sannyas is not an end in itself. Like, and sometimes devotees come to me and they're like, you are on the sannyas list, you may take sannyas in the future. That's such an amazing achievement.
Right.
And I don't know if I really saw it like that, you know, that sannyas is an achievement. Sannyas is an opportunity. Sannyas is a platform. Sannyas is an ashram like any other ashram.
Right.
And it's a vehicle through which we can contribute to the world, contribute to other people's lives. And that's really what it is. So that's the kind of journey that I'm on. It was never a meditation in my life that I never thought I would be a monk, first of all. I never thought I would be a lifelong monk. I never thought of going in that direction.
Yeah.
But as they say, one thing led to another. And over time, the devotees encouraged me that, you know, this is a nice thing to do. It's something which is needed for the movement. And it's something which will nurture your own spiritual growth. And naturally, there's inhibitions, there's kind of hesitancy, there's a sense of trepidation, and then you also wonder, like, am I qualified? Am I doing it for the right reasons? Am I, like, have I got the right mindset? So it takes a lot of internal kind of, introspection and reflection. And, but primarily it's something that is done for sharing with others and serving. And it's something generally that is encouraged by the Vaishnav community, and when it's encouraged by the, you know, our mentors and our guides and our spiritual teachers, then one can be more confident that it's not coming from a place of personal agenda. That was, I guess, the precursor to it.
It was never, I guess that's how life works, isn't it? Sometimes we don't think something's going to happen, or we don't even think, like, okay, you know, being, like you said, being a monk, and then let alone being a lifetime monk and then sannyasi. So yeah, I mean, but it's really interesting, because sannyas, the history of sannyas and ISKCON is just filled with so much stigma and kind of baggage, isn't it? Yeah. How do you deal with that? I mean, that's a question that I was thinking about, is that, you know, it's like in some ways it is an achievement to take ISKCON in 2021 to take sannyas, because there's such a rigorous like kind of monitoring of the devotee who's the candidate, and then you know, maybe looking at the astrology and asking, I think there's like a board and you have to be accepted by the board and things. How does that work exactly?
Yeah. I'll just map the history coming up to ISKCON.
Sure.
Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, you know, although sannyas actually is mentioned in the scriptures. Ashvamedham gava lambam, there's a verse which explains that there's certain activities which shouldn't be done in
Kali Yuga. Right, right.
And one of them is sannyas. And this is cited within the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself goes on to take sannyas.
Right.
You know, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas is beautifully like depicted in the biographies. You know, like Chaitanya Mangal is explained, you know, there's this long conversation going on between Sachi Mata and Mahaprabhu about him taking sannyas. And he uses all these arguments, you know, like he says to his mom, isn't it the duty of a son that when he grows up, he has to leave home and earn wealth and then bring that wealth back to the family? And she's like, yeah, that's what a son's supposed to do. And he's like, so then I'm going to leave home and I'm going to get the wealth of Prema Dan, Harinam, Kirtan, and then I'm going to bring that Prema Dan back.
Wow.
That's not quite the Dan I was thinking of. But,
right.
So it's beautifully depicted how Mahaprabhu takes sannyas and why he takes sannyas. And he takes it because the higher principle is a principle of sharing, of giving. Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan Das Thakur says, Mahaprabhu gives up the world of family life in order to embrace the whole world as his family.
Right.
It's a beautiful like outpouring of just giving.
Wow.
And that's the purpose of sannyas. But then what happened actually in the Gaudiya Sampradaya is from the Goswamis onwards, sannyas was not really present within the Sampradaya. Therefore, even when you see the Goswamis, they're not in saffron, they don't have dandas. Yeah. It's more when the devotees were going towards renunciation, they were taking Babaji. And really where sannyas was reintroduced was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And it was contentious. He reintroduced sannyas into the Gaudiya Parampara.
Right.
The Bengali Vaishnavas were kind of, they were questioning Bhaktisiddhanta, why are you bringing in sannyas? And their main arguments were that, you know, sannyas is a position, it invites respect, it invites, you know, a position. And that's counterproductive to Mahaprabhu's principle of Trinadapi Sunichena, you should not take it. They were saying, you know, Mahaprabhu himself said, Naham Vipro, Nacha, Narapatir, Napi, Vaisho. I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a grihastha, I'm none of these things, we're just the servant of the servant. So they looked at Bhaktisiddhanta and they said, like, why are you reintroducing sannyas?
Right.
And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was that revolutionary. That he was introduced in, interested in introducing things that would help to spread the movement. And so he saw that the Ramakrishna mission in Bengal, the Mayavadis, their sannyasis, their spiritual leaders were able to really contribute and make an impact on people. So he reintroduced sannyas. He himself took sannyas from a picture. Another highly controversial thing.
Yes.
And then we know that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came in Prabhupada's dream and was inviting Prabhupada to take sannyas. And, you know, Prabhupada said it was like a nightmare, you know, it was like shocking, the thought of taking sannyas. And then obviously we know Prabhupada did take sannyas. And then Prabhupada began giving sannyas to very young devotees.
Yeah.
you know, and Srila Prabhupada did it for the purpose of preaching, for the purpose of empowering, for the purpose of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. And obviously, that came with its difficulties. Some devotees were taking sannyas at, you know, 21, 22, 23. We've both been 21 and 22-year-olds. You can imagine, you know, taking sannyas.
Yeah.
I think Rita Ananda Maharaj talks about how he took sannyas and then Prabhupada made him like the GBC of South America. I think he was like 22 or 23 years old.
Wow.
And of course, he had been made the GBC of South America, but there was nothing going on in South America.
Oh, at the time,
so,
right.
Yeah, so he just flew, he said, I flew into South, like Brazil or somewhere, Rio de Janeiro or somewhere. And he said, we just got a map. And we just started putting pins in the map saying, we're going to start a temple here, start a temple here. And this is what they did, you know, just pioneers.
Right.
So the sannyasis did incredible service and they made incredible sacrifices. But there were also, yeah, difficulties and, a lot of problems in ISKCON as well, which came from maybe a struggle to follow the vows of sannyas. And so, yeah, it did become a very kind of contentious thing within ISKCON. And then I guess over time, the devotees came in and looked at the situation, tried to understand why sannyasis were maybe having difficulties and then put in the measures. And, you know, nowadays it's a lot more stabilized. And as you said, there's a whole process behind it.
Right. Yeah, the process from what I've read is there's an application and then you have to be kind of connected with a mentor, and then that person kind of monitors what you're doing. I think it's really nice, and it's good, but then we don't see so many young sannyasis, right? There, it's kind of more. What do you know? What the age is that you can kind of be approved?
So you can apply for sannyas at the age of 35.
I'm 35.
Yeah, you're leaning over the form now, Russ.
Oh, 35, okay.
35, and, you know, I guess that's when I began my journey.
I see, okay.
But you don't generally take sannyas until you're minimum 40. But most sannyasis are 50 plus.
Right.
It's considered that taking later on, is perhaps more wise, more safer in many ways. You've seen many more things, and definitely that age can help.
Right.
I think when they analyzed difficulties that sannyasis had, one of the difficulties was naturally age, you know. You can take at 40, and many have taken.
That's not so old, actually. I thought it was much later. I thought it was like 55 or 50, but 40 is even still pretty young, I would say. So, okay, that's really interesting. So let's talk a little bit about, for all our listeners, if you have any questions, please put them in the comment section. We'll be taking questions later. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a little bit about marrying the mission, because you said that, you know, it's not just, when we had this conversation, it's not just about sannyasis who can kind of so-called, you know, marry the mission, but all of us can. So what are your viewpoints on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Prabhupada sent three householder couples to London, and they established the Krishna consciousness movement in London, as we know. And Prabhupada famously commented that my grihastha disciples did what previously sannyasis had come to London to do, but they couldn't do.
Right.
And Srila Prabhupada showed that marrying the mission is something that anyone can do, that anyone can contribute to. It's such a beautiful thing. You know, like there's this pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Mahaprabhu going to South India, and then he comes to the house of this Kurma Brahmana.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like, he's a householder. And you can imagine, it doesn't go into details, but you can imagine it's like a chaotic household. He's got different things going on. And then Mahaprabhu comes, you know, like this effulgent, fresh, like vibrant, you know, just buzzing sannyasi. And he just captures the imagination of the Kurma Brahmana. And the Kurma Brahmana, just like Mahaprabhu's like, okay, I got to keep the wheels turning now, you know, like I'm going to my next destination. And the Kurma Brahmana comes and says like, I want to come with you. I've had enough. I've had enough of the waves of materialistic family life. And it's interesting because, you know, Mahaprabhu doesn't like, you know, think like, oh, great, here we go, another sannyasi for the mission, you know.
Right.
Mahaprabhu looks at him and says, Jare dekha tarekaha Krishna upadesh, amara agyaya guru anatare e desh. He just says, the waves of materialistic family life will not affect you if you do this one thing. Everyone you meet, everyone you see, everyone you speak to, tell them about Krishna.
Right.
And it's such an interesting instruction because like, you have to think about it a little bit because you can't make the link immediately. Like say tomorrow, if a grihastha was to come to you and say like, Namras, I got all these problems in my grihastha life and it's difficult. And you just look back at him and said, everyone you see, everyone you meet, just tell them about Krishna. Everything's going to be fine. The person might look at you and say like, okay, but can you give me something more practical? Like I need to deal with my... So it's very profound that Mahaprabhu says that because it means that there's a sense in which when you get absorbed in the mission, when you get absorbed in the mood of selflessness, when you get absorbed in the spirit of giving, then your spiritual life turns around. Internally, it brings an absorption, right? We've all experienced like when you're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the problems kind of just disappear.
Yeah.
So it brings an absorption. It brings a realization when you preach. Yeah. It's like when you go out and you preach and you try to help other people, you kind of begin to look at your own life in a different way. I remember going out on book distribution and hearing like all the problems that people are going through. And I used to come back at the end of the day and think, you know what? My life's not that bad. You know, it's okay.
Yeah.
True. You get absorption, you get realization, you get like reciprocation. Like you get Mahaprabhu's mercy and that mercy transforms your life and helps you overcome problems, blocks. So yeah, like he just told the Kurma Brahmana, marry the mission. Just everyone you see, everyone you speak to, just tell them about Krishna and you'll find that your life turns around. And so yeah, although sannyas is like, externally, it's a life in which we give up everything to just try to fully be missionaries. The beauty of Srila Prabhupada's movement is that he gave that opportunity to each and every one in every single ashram.
Right.
And it's interesting. I'll just say one more thing and let me butt in. Sometimes I also saw, like, I lived here in the ashram coming up to 20 years now. And you know what ashrams are like. You've lived in ashrams. They're like, you know, they're like the rotating turnstiles. You know, like people come, people go, and there's no problem with that. That's actually that's completely natural. And what I noticed is that some of the most amazing missionaries in our movement became brahmacharis and then left the ashram and did the most amazing things after they left the ashram.
Mm.
You know, sometimes people think like, oh no, I couldn't become a monk. I blew it. I lost my chance. Now I'm just going to be like a League Two householder who's just like struggling and, you know, just able to chant my rounds. But no, you see people who left the ashram and in their grihastha ashram do like incredible things. So everyone just has to find their space. But yeah, then go forth and marry the mission.
Yeah. I really like that. I really like what you said about marrying the mission. You know, I feel like it's an easy thing to say, but sometimes hard to do because for a number of reasons, one of them I want to address kind of is maybe sometimes it's difficult to have faith sometimes in leadership, in some leaders that may not be to our liking or we don't agree with. So I think it's something more than the mission itself. Like, when you mean the mission, what do you mean exactly?
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada was special. Everyone's special. Srila Prabhupada is very special.
Yes.
Srila Prabhupada had such a spirit of giving. He really took that from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he took it deep within his heart. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a hardcore missionary. You know, there's this like, one time he was giving this lecture. This is a lecture or a piece of writing, and he makes this like profound statement. He says, "I wish that every selfless, tender-hearted member of the Gaudiya Math be willing to shed 200 gallons of blood to uplift the spiritual corpus of society." And it's just like, you know, it's powerful. Yeah, like 200 gallons of, like, how many gallons of blood is there in the human body? I think it's like, right? Google it, check it out. Two or three gallons, I don't know. Yeah, he was expecting, you know, driving to share Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada met him in 22, and even before Prabhupada got up from the obeisances, he said, "You're intelligent, you're young, why don't you spread Krishna consciousness all over the world?" And so Prabhupada just took that. And Prabhupada delayed that order to some extent because of his, you know, different responsibilities that he had, but it was sitting there, and then Prabhupada just came. And I think when we talk about mission, what the first thing that I think of is Prabhupada on the Jaladuta, you know, just coming to America and just journeying into the unknown, you know, taking all risk. Going into precarious situations and really just trying to connect people to Krishna, connect as many people in as profound a way as you can to Krishna. And yeah. And I think that's what mission is. Mission means let's bring as many people closer to Krishna as we can, and in the process, let's ourselves come closer to Krishna. And embracing the whole world as your family. And you're right, it sounds good in theory. And maybe we should get into some of the practical difficulties. But what I would say is that first, that inspiration must be there. You know, that's why I think reading Prabhupada's biographies and hearing Prabhupada's story is so important.
Yeah.
Because it just ignites that inspiration that Srila Prabhupada was just willing to go to any length to share. And I think when that inspiration is strong, then there will be practical difficulties, but that inspiration will find solutions. So I would say mission means to bring as many people closer to Krishna as we can and come closer ourselves. And it must begin with a spirit. It must begin with a spirit of feeling a deep gratitude for what Srila Prabhupada did. And from that platform, we can then, you know, look at how to do it.
Yeah. When I hear you say that, I'm reminded when I first got in touch with the Pandavasena, when I first met you, I couldn't understand what was so, like, and why were these devotees so enthusiastic about, like, jammings and you know, these Manavasena retreats and things like that. Like, it was so infectious, really, to be around them that we tried to start it in America. You know, when we came back, we're like, we should start up a Pandavasena here, you know. And I feel it's really something, you know, that you have to understand what I heard one devotee talking about this, like, we have to understand what the prospect is to actually appreciate you know, spreading Krishna consciousness and sharing it with others. If we don't understand what the prospect is or what the end goal is, connecting with Krishna, as you said, connecting people with Krishna, then we may not be strong enough to kind of take that on ourselves.
And experiencing it, yeah. Like today, disappearance. Today is the disappearance of Srivas Thakur. And you know, like Mahaprabhu comes from Gaya and then he just comes right there to Srivas Angan. And there in Srivas Angan, they're just having like these far out kirtans. And there in the Srivas Angan, it's not so much about mission because they're just behind closed doors. In fact, they're locking the doors. They're like, right.
No one in.
No one can come in, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kaviraj Goswami explains it beautifully. He says, like, at a certain point, the energy generated from Srivas Angan was just like bursting. And then the doors just had to burst open. And then Kaviraj Goswami says, you know, patra patra vichar nahi, nahi stan astan. They didn't consider, we'll go to this place, we won't go to this place. These are good people, these are bad. Jai jane payatane kare prema dhan. They just went everywhere and they just gave Krishna prema. And then he says in the next verse, lutiya khaiya diya bandara ujade. He said there was this treasure house of love. And the first thing that the Panchatattva did is lutiya. They broke it open. And then khaiya, they ate it. And then when you're eating it, then the natural consequence is diya. You know, you think like, I've got to give, I've got to share the love, you know. And then he says, and the most, bhakti is the most wondrous commodity. Bandarya ascharya. Ascharya means wondrous. Is wondrous because it's the only commodity in the world where when you give, your own stock increases. It's so much about... you have to also be experiencing it. Yeah. I remember once we went out on Sankirtan book distribution. Yeah, it's not always easy. So it's one of those days. It was like, you know, it's cold. It was, you know, it was raining. It was dull, you know. And then we got in, and then we had this trolley with like, you know, loaded up with books. It was heavy. And, you know, you just had an argument with a devotee in the car. And, you know, we were all going out onto the street and we were far from enthused, you know. And then and we got into the lift. And then in the lift, there was this sign. I don't know in the U.S. if you have the Samaritans. But the Samaritans, they're like a Christian organization where if you got any problems, you can always ring them. It's like a
help. Oh, I see. Okay.
There was this advert for the Samaritans. And it said like, you know, are you struggling? Do you feel down today? Do you feel like what you're doing in life is not completely what you want to be doing? And we were all reading this. And we were like, guys, we need to call this number, you know.
Right.
I'm sure if we want to be out here. So sometimes it's like that. You go out and you're not always experiencing it. But one thing I would also say is that when you get into the spirit of preaching, magic happens. You know, it does, you know, it's one of those things as well where when you just get into it, the mercy, you know, the miracles of Mahaprabhu start and you really get drawn into that whole thing. So sorry to go on a long point, but the point is right that we have to experience. Otherwise, what are we giving? It's mechanical.
Yeah. What do you feel like when devotees say, when they quote that Prabhupada letter where Prabhupada said, you know, I can't remember exactly what he said before this famous statement, but it was something like, so much expansion and so many devotees, what's the point of all these devotees if they are not educated properly in Krishna consciousness? Now boil the milk and make it sweet and don't try to expand so much. He wrote that in a letter to someone specifically. So my viewpoint on letters is that it's for that specific person at that time. You can't just like blanket it for the whole movement. But people do quote that. And what would you say to that? Now we have to, you know, don't try to expand so much that we kind of lose people.
Yeah. Yeah, the way I understand that is that on one hand, you Prabhupada wanted expansion. On another hand, Prabhupada wanted quality.
Right.
What I would say is that the first best option is that increase with quality, right? That's the best thing, right? increase with quality. If you can do it, then you're fulfilling everything. My understanding of that statement of Srila Prabhupada is he's saying that if your expansion compromises the quality, and if it's a trade-off in any given situation, then always make sure you conserve the devotees first. And then, you know, then naturally what will actually happen is when you conserve the, take care of the devotees and you inspire them, then naturally the other thing will happen anyway. Right. So that's how I would understand it. But I think another aspect I would say is that preaching and sharing Krishna consciousness is also a really important part of our own personal development as well. And so like half of the time when I'm out there doing whatever I'm trying to do to share Krishna consciousness, I almost feel like most of it is for me, you know, most of it is helping me.
Interesting.
You know, like Kaviraj Goswami is writing Chaitanya Charitamrita. Of course, he's in deep humility, but he says, it's only for my self-purification that I write, you know. And it's kind of like that we share Krishna consciousness as part of our own self-development as well. So, yeah, we want to expand with quality. Both ideally should happen side by side. Yeah.
You personally, being like a leader brahmachari in the temple that you're with Bhaktivedanta Manor, how do you inspire devotees who may not have that kind of missionary spirit? Because not everyone may have that inclination, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's this famous story of, I think it was John F. Kennedy. I think, don't quote me on it, but he went to NASA. He went to the Cape Canaveral, the NASA space station, right?
Yeah.
So he goes into the bathroom or whatever, and there's a janitor, and the janitor is like cleaning. He's cleaning the, you know, the sinks and all that stuff, and he's like doing it really attentively, and he's like really, you know, absorbed in it. So John F. Kennedy is like, you know, he's like, wow, this janitor is like so into his job. So he goes up to the janitor and he says, you know, you're a janitor, you're a cleaner. What inspires you to be a cleaner? And he just looks straight back at John F. Kennedy and he says, I'm not cleaning bathrooms. I'm part of a team that's putting a man on the moon.
Just for everyone, we're not talking about the moon landing right now.
No, we're not talking about the moon landing. Yes. That's another podcast. Yes. And then John F. Kennedy goes, whoa. And then he says, this is a beautiful organization. Because in this organization, everyone is part of the mission. Mm. And even the person who's not on the front line feels as though they're part of, you know, contributing to that mission.
Right.
And I think that's what we kind of have to get to the point of doing in the Krishna consciousness movement, where there will be some of the devotees who are out there handing a book to someone or speaking in front of a mic or, you know, leading a kirtan. And there's a whole bunch of devotees who are also part of that same mission, who may not be on that end of things, but who are as involved and as enthused and as concerned about the Krishna consciousness movement spreading. We used to have one brahmachari in the ashram, and he never went out. He never left the ashram.
Right.
Every single day when the Sankirtan devotees would come back, he'd be like, how many books went out? And like, tell me, who did you meet? Tell me a story. And he was like super enthused.
Yeah.
And I used to think like, he's the greatest Sankirtan devotee. He's just the greatest Sankirtan devotee because he's got the spirit.
Right.
It doesn't matter that he's not leaving the building because he wants it to happen. He's concerned and he's enthused. So he's also part of the Sankirtan movement and it inspired us, you know. So I think it's just a matter of everyone finding their dharma, finding their place, and then everyone being like, yeah, part of a team that's, you know, bringing the world closer the beautiful spiritual consciousness that's known as Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. I that's really, really nice. I like that. It's kind of like a machine, like a little screw in a machine might outwardly seem like, oh, it's, you don't need it, but actually might be some really big part of the machine that makes the whole thing work. And if you don't have those certain things, so people even on the back end who are doing things to be part of the mission is also part of the mission.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely.
So sometimes I did a podcast, gosh, it was like maybe a year ago or maybe more. No, it's more than a year ago now. But we were talking about mission drift. Do you feel like that the mission is maybe drifting a little since the time of Srila Prabhupada? I mean, let's be real. It sort of is in some ways. And how do you deal with that? Being a leader in your community and everything, you have to have a certain outlook on things. Like, you have to have a look very positive, you know, not to harp too much on negative parts of the mission, but there's a little drift that you could say that we could say, you know, but how do you deal with that?
Yeah. ISKCON is a big world. So it'd be difficult to talk about ISKCON, you know, because every yatra, every temple, every
right.
community has its own.
You
can't put a blanket on it, but yeah, there could be a mission drift. But what I would say, okay, before I talk about mission drift, I think, and maybe I've already talked a little bit about this, but I'm kind of highlighting it, that I feel the spirit drift is what we have to address first.
Wow. You know? Spirit drift. Oh, interesting. Yeah,
spirit drift, you know, because Prabhupada, you know, Krishna consciousness, when Prabhupada set up the Krishna consciousness movement, he didn't really set it up as an institution, if you look at it. Srila Prabhupada set it up as a movement, as, an adventure, something that was growing, something that was moving with the times. When Prabhupada set up the Krishna consciousness movement, it wasn't about belief or faith, but it was about dynamically experiencing Krishna through spiritual science, you know. So Srila Prabhupada set up ISKCON with a spirit of preaching, with a spirit of giving, with a spirit of sharing what we've been given. And sometimes, I mean, we don't want to be negative and we don't want to be like, you know, put a downer on it. But sometimes you look at the spirit of this, you know, the 60s and the 70s, and you think like, wow, it's such a beautiful spirit. You know, like, I love this. You can check it out on YouTube. There's this, you know, this song by Mangalananda Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya's Moon is Rising.
Oh, beautiful song. Yeah.
It is this video on YouTube where this, like, he's singing that song. And I think the video is like a video of like Rath Yatra in like San Francisco in like, I don't know, sometime in the 70s or something.
Yeah.
And I tell you, Namraj, when I see this video, it brings like, I get emotional, you know.
Yeah. Is it the one where Prabhupada's in the cart and he's like throwing roses or something? Or
I think, yeah. And Jayananda Prabhu is there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And there's this whole spirit. You just like, amazing. You know, we're out there on the street and we're telling everyone we meet that we're going home, you know. And it's just like.
Beautiful song.
You know, it's such a beautiful thing. And I think, you know, like we were not able to see Srila Prabhupada like that, you know, see that time of ISKCON. And sometimes people say, like, you know, I don't know, like, how much I'm in, like, meditating on being in Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna and how much that captures my imagination necessarily. But the thought of being with Srila Prabhupada, you know, when he was just here doing the mission, you know, manifesting Mahaprabhu's miracles and that spirit that he exuded, when you start thinking of being there in that time, you start getting excited. You think, like,
right.
What would it be like to be, live there on the ground with Srila Prabhupada, you know, who was exuding that spirit so much. And how can we recreate that? I don't know. Like, of course, we know Srila Prabhupada's Vani is there, and he says the spiritual master lives forever in his instructions. But I've spoken to many Prabhupada disciples, and I'm sure you have also, and, you know, they say that there was just something special. Some when a personality like that is on the planet, right, the spirit that they're exuding is just incredible. So somehow or other, I think first thing is the spirit drift, you know, and the more devotees who, you know, can come together and really get enthused to do something amazing for Srila Prabhupada and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then I think Krishna will start giving us the intelligence. Krishna will start giving us the insight and the intuition to know how and in what way to preach. Right. It sometimes feels, when you look at how Srila Prabhupada spread the movement, I mean, he didn't really come with a business plan or a strategy. He was just absorbed, you know, and Krishna was directing it all. And of course, Prabhupada later on did say organization and intelligence. So we do have to use our brains. But when the spirit is there, you know, there's a transcendental dictation which is moving the movement. And then mission drift, yeah, it's possible. It's possible. Some of the mission drift, I think, may be because we have lost the spirit.
Yeah.
Some of the mission drift may be because we're experimenting, and we need to experiment in different ways. And someone may see an experiment and say, that's mission drift. But we have to experiment because we have to find new ways in which to make Krishna consciousness relevant, powerful, and accessible to the masses. So we have to experiment. And some of mission drift, it may be also historical. Like one thing I was thinking is that a key difference between the 60s and the 70s and now is just the demographics of ISKCON, right? Yeah. So in the 60s and 70s, like 99% of the devotees lived in ashrams. Right. And nowadays, 99% of the devotees don't live in ashrams. They live out there in society, and they have responsibilities, and they have, you know, things to cater for. And so how to rediscover the missionary spirit, how to again come onto that cutting edge spirit of giving while living in the world, that's what we have to now kind of rediscover.
Yeah. So, yeah. I always think about this, that like when you were saying how do we rediscover that spirit that was there? Like I can accept that that spirit cannot come back. Like is my life going to continue just to be like, I'm so unfortunate that I wasn't born during that time of the 70s and it was really a nice time, and now we have to deal with what we're dealing right now, and it's not gonna come back. What do you think about that? Like, are we gonna have that same kind of enthusiasm again, or we're just gonna have to deal with what we were working with now? You know, or what was that?
In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, he has this beautiful verse where he says, "Adyapi hashay lila kaha gaura roy kona kona bhagyavan dekhi bara koi." He says, "Adyapi hashay lila kaha gaura roy." The pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are going on even today. Kona kona bhagyavan, but where is that fortunate person? Dekhi bara koi. Only the fortunate people will be able to see. Mahaprabhu's pastimes are going on. There's this pastime of like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur where he just like, he's in Navadvip or somewhere close to Navadvip, and in the middle of the night, he just like, he wakes up and he just says, Gauranga's here, Nityananda's here, the Sankirtan party is passing by. And you're like, it's like in the middle of the night, everyone wakes up. And everyone's looking around like, where is it? We don't see anything, you know? And he's right. And then he looks around, everyone says, did you see? We are, you know? And Prabhupada did say that ISKCON is the, you know, or the, you know, the Gaudiya mission going on is the latest chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Wow.
You know, we all experience miracles. Mahaprabhu's movement is a movement of miracles. I'm sure you have. I have also a little, you know, miraculous things happen.
Yeah.
You know, like just to share one story.
Please.
Sankirtan story, you know. Like once I was traveling on Sankirtan and then on my phone, I got like 20 missed calls on one number, right? So I thought, my God, 20 missed calls. So I called the number back and the person didn't pick up. But I thought, this person called me 20 times. It must be something important. So what I did is I saved the number in my phone as A. So it was just like the first number on my phone book. And I thought I'll ring them later on.
Right.
1 year passed and I forgot about it. But that number was still on my phone. Right? 1 year later, I'm getting ready to go out on Sankirtan. I'm getting my phone together. And somehow or other, I accidentally called that number. So I'm looking at my phone and I'm thinking, oh my God, that was from like a year ago. So I listen and it's ringing. But I thought, anyway, I'm just going to put this down. That chapter's gone, right?
Yeah.
So it rang, but I put it down. That day, I decided to go on Sankirtan to a town I've never been for. It's near Oxford. So I'm going, I reach the town, I'm distributing. 12 o'clock in the middle of the day, one guy comes up to me. And he's like completely interested, like a book distributor's dream. He's like, I want one of every single book. I'm like, yeah, no problem. We can supply it, no problem. So he takes all the books, gives, you know, kind donation, and then he walks off. And then he comes back to me. And he says, you know what? It's amazing you should stop me today. I say, why? He said, because a Hare Krishna called me this morning.
No. That can't be real.
So it didn't click to me. I said, oh, who is it? Maybe I know them. Maybe I know who it is, you know, like. So he gets his phone out and he goes through his phone and he goes, Sutapa. I'm about to faint. Yeah. I'm about to faint on the street. And I go, that's me. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, that's me. And like, I'm showing him my ID card. I'm like, no, that's me. And then it clicked to me. And then I went on my phone and I went to A and I called. I said, is this your number? He said, that's my number. He looks at me and he goes, how did you get my number? I looked at him and I go, how did you get my number?
Oh my God.
And then he said, 1 year ago, I was getting interested in the Bhagavad Gita. So one of my friends, he was going to a program in Northampton that I was doing at that time. So he said, one of my friends told me to get in touch with a monk. That was me. Because he can get you a Gita. So he goes, yeah, 1 year ago, I called this monk 20 times, but he never answered my call.
Goodness.
Can you imagine, 1 year later, I call that number randomly. I go to a town I've never been before in my life. And out of the tens of thousands of people in that town, I stop that very person that I accidentally called that morning.
That is unbelievable.
You know what I mean? It's like these things happen. And then you think like... And I've seen it in the lives of devotees. When you reach out, you know, Kaviraj Goswami says, Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Karaha Vichar, Vichar Karite Chite Bhave Chamatkar. If you have intelligence, if you think you're intelligent, try to apply your intelligence to the mercy and the magic of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you will not be able to fathom it. It will go beyond. These are the miracles that, and I see it in devotees' lives. I see, even around me today, I see devotees doing unthinkable things. You know, devotees connecting with people, you know, achieving things for Krishna, you know, spreading the messages in amazing ways. And you just think this is all empowerment. So Prabhupada's times were special, no doubt. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement and Prabhupada's spirit can live on. I feel that. And you get some glimpse of it. But it means we have to reach out. It means we have to take a risk. We have to be courageous. We have to kind of put ourselves out there a bit. And then you kind of get into that kind of transcendental energy where kind of miracles begin manifesting.
That's insane. And did you say that Prabhupada said that the ISKCON movement that's happening, or the Gaudiya mission that's happening right now, is another chapter of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes?
Yeah, it's the latest chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Mahaprabhu's pastimes are going on. It's going on now, you know. It's happening. And the movement was full of miracles. You know, you see it in Mahaprabhu's times. There are miracles happening now as we speak. There's miraculous things happening. Devotees are incredible. They're just doing such special things, you know. And you can imagine there's going to be, you know, so much more. I remember when I joined as a brahmachari, I don't know, you may have met Shruti Dharma Prabhu.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
Of course, yeah, you must have met him, yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, that again, it was one of those situations where the devotees were hunting you down, you know, to pin you down, you know, like join, you know,
yeah,
in a nice way. And again, I thought to myself, yeah, these guys want me, you know, they've seen some potential in me, you know, I had a little pride, you know, and I still do. But then one day he just came to me and he said something which just like, it shattered me and it inspired me. He just came to me and he said, you know what? This movement is going to go on. This movement is full of magic, miracles, and the most mystical things that you can imagine. It's going to happen. It's going to happen whether you join or whether you don't join. The question is, do you want to be part of it?
Wow.
And so it was like, it was shattering because he like just killed my ego. But then it was like, no, but I want to be part of that. I want to be on board. Like, sign me up. I want to be in it, you know?
Right.
So I think it is, it's a movement of miracles and, you know, beautiful things happen. I feel like, you know, I had the fortune, as you did, to be in Vrindavan many times. I had the fortune to serve the deities. I had the fortune to be in the presence of many exalted Vaishnavas. But still, I have to say that my most magical, mystical, moving, memorable experiences in spiritual life have been while giving Krishna consciousness or trying to give Krishna consciousness to others.
Wow.
Because Krishna just becomes so active. Krishna just becomes so present. Mahaprabhu just, you know, is there. He's communicating with you. You know, like a few years ago, we were doing this marathon and we were trying to encourage the devotees to visit 50,000 homes in like 1 month, you know, and try and share Krishna consciousness with people. And it came to like the last 3 days and we had only done 20,000 houses. And so we came up with this idea like, okay, 3 days, 30,000 houses. Let's get everyone out there. And so we came out with this plan and I was on Canva. You know Canva where you like make up the posters online? I don't know if you know it.
Right, right. Yeah.
So I was making this little advert, you know, like 30,000 doors, 3 days, we need everyone on board. And I was writing it up and I was just thinking, come on, this is not going to work. It's obviously not going to work. I was just being really negative. And then what happens with that Canva is that once you've made the poster, it kind of, you download it and it takes some time to generate it.
Yeah.
And while it's generating, a quote pops up. So I finished this poster. I'm really negative. I'm like, oh no, this is never going to happen. And then I thought, anyway, let me just download it. So I downloaded it. And as I was downloading it, this quote popped up by like Nelson Mandela. And it was like, everything in life seems impossible until the moment you actually do it. And I was like, whoa, that's a sign, you know, that's a sign. Right? So I thought, then I got inspired. I thought, okay, let's do it. Let's try it, you know?
Yeah.
And then we did it, you know, we did like 33,000 homes in 3 days, you know?
My goodness. Sometimes I like what you said about the magical, the chamatkars that we kind of sometimes we come across so many of these kind of astonishing moments that it becomes like kind of we take it for granted, like we don't even see it sometimes because it's so much a part of like Krishna consciousness, just feeling or you might get from doing a spiritual activity or meeting a spiritual person or sharing Krishna consciousness. And I think we have to really remember that these are actually astonishing events that don't happen to everyone. It's because we're involved in this mission that these things are happening.
We can take it for granted
is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it is. Like I remember I used to I remember the first time I saw book distributors. I was like 15 years old and I went to the bank with my dad. And he was doing something at the cash point. And then I was just sitting down and through the doors, because I was reading the Gita at that time, I was 15. And then I saw two book distributors on the street. And I just saw them getting rejected.
Right.
And I became very emotional. I looked at them and I thought, these people are saints. Look at them. They're just standing on the street trying to help people. They're saints. And I had that very strong feeling. And I thought, I pray that I'd be able to do something a little bit like them in the future, you know? And I always found, like, later on when I was doing book distribution, sometimes I would just sit on the side and just watch book distributors, like, interact with people. And you know, do something like nice karate moves in a nice way, a few charming words, and you know, just connect people. And I could just sit there all day watching book distributors because it was actually a very mystical thing.
Mm.
When you're doing it, you just kind of think like, oh, it's a little 20 seconds, a little bit of a joke, a bit of a cheeky remark, you know, and you know, get the book over and it's all done and you just sold a book. But actually something very profound is going on in that interaction, you know. And yeah, you're right. Sometimes we don't appreciate that. We don't.
What would you say to, like, it's, you know, for you and all the devotees who live in the temple, it's like something that like can immediately you can be connected with, you know, the mission and sharing Krishna consciousness. But like someone like me or a grihastha who has children and a home to maintain, it might be a little bit difficult to make that connection the same way that we were able to when we were in the ashram. What would you say to someone like that?
Yeah. The first thing I would say is sharing Krishna consciousness it can just become part of your day-to-day life, right? Like the day-to-day activities. I remember when I first went out with the Sankirtan devotees, and then we got to the petrol station, right? So in the UK, you have to get out and put it in yourself. So they, you know, I was the youngest guy, so like, oh, you get out, put it in, right?
Yeah.
So when I put it in, they said, how much? So I put in 60 pounds into the tank, 60 pounds of fuel. And then the devotee came to me and he goes, one pence more. I go, no, but 60 pounds. I got 60 pounds. He goes, no, 1 pence more. So I was like, okay. So then I just kind of tipped it and then it went like 60 pounds and 1 pence. And then I went into the cashier and obviously I only had 60 pounds. So I gave 60 and he didn't charge for the one penny. So I came back to the, I go, why did you tell me to put the extra penny on? He goes, they're not going to charge you for the extra penny, but by them not charging you for that extra penny, they've donated 1 penny of petrol to the Sankirtan movement.
Wow.
I was like, these they think in a different way, you know?
Yeah.
Because the spirit is there. The spirit is always a spirit of how can we give mercy?
Yeah.
And what occurred to me was that, you know, we can just be carriers of mercy in our day-to-day life if we want to be, you know. You know, you're going out every day, you meet, like Mahaprabhu told the Kurma Brahmana, whoever you meet, whoever you see, even if you don't tell them about Krishna, can you do something to like inspire some Krishna magic in their life? Just a small thing, you know, like spike their drink with like maha water or something. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like just find a way. So I think the first thing I would say for those devotees who are living in the community or not able to, is just look at it as part of your life. Don't look at it as a special activity that you have to make necessarily time for. Right. First, look at your immediate opportunities. You have so many opportunities, right? And then what I would say is, then outside of that, we do have time, most of us, if we find a love for it, a taste for it, an inspiration for it.
Right.
Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu has been able to like, yeah, I think he's been on your podcast, like he's mobilized so many devotees, right? Like
yeah.
This small temple, ISKCON Silicon Valley, which has maybe 2 or 3 brahmacharis, is like wiping out all the other temples, and he's just engaging them. Devotional service is apratihata, it's uninterrupted, and Mahaprabhu's movement is so beautiful that it can never be interrupted in any given situation, you know, it goes on. So, yeah, I think it's just a matter of, number one, again, coming back to the spirit, having the spirit and letting that pervade our day-to-day interactions. And then, yeah, finding time and finding ways and means and, yeah.
If you'll find time for things that you feel are important, even if someone may say, oh, I don't have time, but maybe it's not important to them. But if you do find importance in something, you'll make time for it, usually.
Yeah, yeah. It's not, it's life. It becomes life. It's not work, you see?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm just talking a lot about book distribution because that's like, I guess, a lot of the frontline mission that I've, experienced. And
right,
and maybe later on we can talk about book distribution and talk about another reason why preaching spirit may have gone down, which is also preaching done badly. But just one thing on book distribution, like people also, you know, they see book distributors and they see how they're, you know, other people who are working on the street, they see there's a special kind of thing around a book distributor. So I remember I once came into this town and, you know, the devotees must have been there on the day before. And this one charity worker, someone came up to me and he said, yeah, your guys were in town yesterday. They were just cleaning up, you know, they were just making money left, right and center. So I was like, no, we're not. We're monks. We don't make money. We're trying to share knowledge. He goes, no, I saw them. They were selling all these books and they were just like, you know, how much do you guys get paid? And I was like, no, we're monks. We don't, you know, this is not a job. He goes, no, I want to work for you. And I was trying to explain to him. And then I just said to him, this is not work. This is our life. And it was a really nice conversation because I was giving myself a pep talk by preaching to him in the day.
Right.
This is life. This is not work. I'm not out here to do a job. I'm out here because it's an expression of love. I'm actually trying to help people and connect with them heart to heart. And I think, when we see preaching like that, that it's not a job, it's not work, it's such a beautiful thing. It's the best way to connect to people. It's the best way to have relationship. it's the most intimate way in which to contact Krishna. Then you start seeing it in a different way.
Wow.
Like we used to have one Sankirtan leader, and he used to come in, and his pep talk was like, he used to get everyone in a circle, and he was like, "All right, guys, we're going to go out, you know, work now, samadhi later." It was one of those talks, you know. Right. And I appreciated it. It was nice. It instilled in me a spirit of duty, you know.
Right.
But then we had another Sankirtan devotee, and he used to get everyone together, and he used to be like, "All right, guys, today we're going to enter Gaura Leela." You know, I was like, wow, like I connected with his speech a little bit more, you know. It was kind of like, yeah, that sounds exciting, you know. So I think when we begin to see it as an adventure, as an excitement, as something which, you know, we're going to go out there and something Mahaprabhu is going to do is going to be amazing. It just becomes a transcendental drama. Mm. Prabhupada uses those words. He says it's a transcendental drama.
Yeah. I really love that story about that gas station, the extra 1 pence. We were taught something similar that like when you would go and distribute books, you would say, here you go, sir. But, and you'd kind of like touch the Gita to them.
Yeah,
and then the devotee told me, like, if they even touch the Gita, they will get some spiritual benefit. So try to touch it to them and stuff. So that's like a similar thing. Another question I have is, do you feel like sometimes devotees get too caught up in like the numbers of things? Like, for example, you know, you were saying, oh, we want to hit 50,000 homes, or we want to hit but then it becomes like when you're in those last days of meeting that goal, it becomes more about meeting that goal than maybe perhaps the spirit of it.
Perhaps Prabhupada's great genius was that he was someone who just was thinking big.
Right.
But who was just so focused on the individual at the same time. It's unfathomable. Yeah, you know, like Prabhupada's like the acharya, you know. So there's this one story where he's in a temple and there's a guru puja going on. So you can imagine like hundreds of devotees, and they're like, "Jai Prabhupada, there's a guru puja arati going on." And it's just like this whole fanfare of guru worship going on. And then this one devotee comes to the front, and I don't know, she's got like some kind of cold, or she has some fat thing on her hand. And Prabhupada's like, calls her over in the middle of this like rousing guru puja, and is like, "You know, what's that? How did that happen to you? Okay, try this Ayurvedic medicine. Use this much of this, this much of that." Right in the middle of this, like, you know, completely off the wall guru puja. And it was just amazing that Prabhupada was just so connected to the individual.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like, so Prabhupada wanted numbers. He was thinking big.
Wow.
Prabhupada was a big thinker. You know, Tribhuvanath Prabhu tells this story of how Prabhupada was driving past Buckingham Palace. And then one of the devotees goes, "Oh, Prabhupada, you know, one of the Queen's guards, he's become a devotee. One of the Queen's guards become the devotee." And Prabhupada just looks back at him and says, "Oh, and what about the Queen?"
You know,
he was like inspired, like one of the Queen's guards. That's big, you know?
Yeah.
Prabhupada's like, "What about the Queen?" Right? He was thinking big. Yeah. So Prabhupada was driving numbers. He wanted to give out as much mercy as possible. Right. And therefore, we do find statements. Prabhupada is saying, you know, "When I hear the numbers, I feel like a young child again."
Right.
Because Prabhupada wasn't just hearing, and it wasn't just 30,000. He was connected to the faces behind that as well. Mm. For him, that was, you know, like sometimes when you hear Sankirtan numbers, I don't know how you feel, but, you know, sometimes we have a marathon festival and they're going through a list of like 100 devotees and calling out everyone's score. And after about 10 devotees, you're just thinking like, "Oh my God, like just 10 books, 5 books, 6 Lakshmi points, 5 books." You kind of get tired of it because you just think it's just a number. But what occurred to me is that for Prabhupada, it wasn't just a number. He was connecting with the faces behind that number. Mm. And so he had this sense of thinking big, but being very attentive to the individual. And what becomes a danger is when we think big, but we lose the care for the individual. And so I guess one thing that I've tried to do just to balance that is I'm not a big missionary. I'm not a big project organizer. I'd love to do something big for Prabhupada, but whatever kind of projects I could do, which were kind of semi-big or whatever, I always try to balance it with very personal services of also trying to contribute to an individual. Because then I found that when I did the more bigger overarching services, I did it with more heart. And it wasn't just a managerial thing or just a numbers thing, but I was connecting to the human story behind it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I think you're right. You know, there is a danger with just pushing numbers. That's why we also have to be very connected to the individual as well, who's experiencing that, being on the receiving end of that mercy and what they experience. And then it adds more meaning to the bigger things with numbers. I don't know if that makes sense. But
no, it does. It does make sense. I like that. I like the saying, you know, project, the, you know, people over projects, you know, take care of the devotees and then those projects will have much more meaning. Like you're saying, you know, you try to do those things in parallel. I think that's really important. Something I find fascinating is that the manner you have all these like really big goals to do things, but like when you're in like a corporate setting, you have like someone at the top who's like, okay, here's the vision and this, you guys have to meet this. But for devotees, it has to like come from inside. Like no one's telling you like, you got to meet this goal by this year or else, you know, we're going to fire you. It's not like that. So what is that kind of inspiration to make these like really big, amazing goals, you know, particularly there at the manor, because I know there's these initiatives and they're really amazing and they're really, you know, really large scale.
Yeah, Prabhupada, Vaisheshika Prabhu has his place, ISKCON Silicon Valley, and that's ISV. Yeah. And Prabhupada's formula for managers was also ISV. And he said, the service, the spirit of service, the spirit of mission is individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever you're leading anything, especially in the Krishna consciousness movement, you got to realize it's individual, it's spontaneous, and it's voluntary.
Right.
We can't intimidate, we can't force. I think we also tried to do that in the past, you know, where we tell devotees to be part of the mission, because if you don't, you're in Maya, and look at the mountain of Prabhupada quotes, you know. Yeah. Just get all the, you know, Prabhupada Brahmastra quotes out, you know, violate someone's, Maya. But sometimes it doesn't work, you know. So we have to inspire, and we have to, as I said, it's kind of that shift between work now, samadhi later, and going more towards, you know what, this is, if we all do this together, we're going to experience something beautiful in that joint effort to serve Srila Prabhupada. We're going to see Srila Prabhupada smile.
Yeah.
And I think devotees have it within them. Although I think you've mentioned that sometimes the spirit may not be there, I think the devotees have the spirit. When we go in front of Prabhupada, we do feel challenged, you know. I remember there's one Prabhupada disciple here, Kishore Prabhu. And I asked him one time, like, what do you feel like on Prabhupada's appearance day or his disappearance day? And he looked at me and he said, I just feel challenged. Mm. I feel challenged that I need to do more. I need to be more. I need to give more. Wow. I need to reciprocate more.
I love that.
And so it's there within us. It's such a, you know, Kadambakarna Maharaj talks about in Vrindavan, Prabhupada's disappearance day. And maybe you have been in Prabhupada's room at that time, you know, the time when Prabhupada, you know, left the world.
Right.
And he says, often on that day, Gopal Krishna Maharaj brings Prabhupada's chada that he was wearing at that time. And he comes around the room and he puts it on everyone's head. And Kadambakarna Maharaj says, when that chada comes on your head, you feel the heavy weight expectation of Srila Prabhupada.
Wow. You know,
guru means heavy. Prabhupada was a heavy guru. He had a heavy mission and he had a heavy expectation and he had heavy dreams for what Krishna consciousness would become. And not in a bad way, not in a burdensome way, but a burden of love. It's there within us. We feel challenged. We feel. And I think what we need to do is just, number one, inspire devotees to do it. And number two, which is also very important, is facilitate them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what I found is, like, for example, we tell devotees, like, distribute books, distribute books, distribute books. But then how much have we actually walked through that experience with them and said, like, all right, guys, we're all going to go out together and this is how you can do it. And, you know, we'll do it together for one day. You know, then they feel more empowered to do it.
Right.
So I feel a lot of the time what we do in the Krishna consciousness movement is we tell people what to do, but we may not necessarily equip them in terms of how they can do it.
Right.
And leadership means inspiration, education and facilitation. You got to facilitate them as well. And, you know, someone like Vaisheshika Prabhu, that's why, you know, he has so much success, because he inspires and he facilitates, you know.
He does it himself.
He does it himself. He's such and that's such an important point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like that, you know, you trust the leader who's out there on the, you know, on the front lines with you.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. So you said ISV, inspiration,
individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. Yeah.
Right. Right. I like that a lot. Let's look at the comment section. So for our listeners, we're going to take questions. So if you have any questions, please put it in the comments. Let's start here from our old friend. You know Shantavigraha Prabhu.
Yeah, Shantavigraha.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Shantavigraha Prabhu, our old friend. Definitely when we are absorbed in Krishna consciousness, our material problems become manageable. But is there an instance when we use Krishna consciousness as an excuse for not taking proper care of our material duties?
Yeah, Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita how there's renunciation in different modes. And he says when we renounce something because it's difficult or because it's troublesome, then that's kind of renunciation in the lower modes. And so sometimes we may become detached or become renounced and then use Krishna consciousness or use our spiritual inspirations as like an excuse for that. I think what one thing that I've kind of meditated and spoke to devotees more about, and it probably needs more churning, is that I think what we need to do is try as much as possible when you're living as grihasthas to live an integrated life. And what I mean by an integrated life is a life in which your material duties are contributing to your spiritual life. And your spiritual things are contributing to doing your material things well.
Can you give an example of that?
So like, say for example, And it's a situation that you have to create. But say, for example, your job, your career. If you can somehow find a career in which you're able to earn money and maintain your household, but at the same time, through that career, you're able to do service, you're able to contribute to the Krishna consciousness movement, and you're able to gain certain things that are that can be used in the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then it's much easier to become inspired about your career, because you don't just think, oh, I'm just here to earn money. And the real service that I'm going to do is when I, you know, when I'm out of hours. So it's not always easy, but I think your work life, your family life, your kind of day-to-day spare time, the things you do in your spare time, you know, you need to take a holiday with the family. You know, that's part of material duty. But why not take a holiday in a spiritual way? And in that way, contribute to your spiritual life. So it's about integrating and bringing the material and the spiritual together as much as possible.
Right. Here's another question, I think along the same lines. Another thought, can we use the giving of Krishna consciousness to others as a substitute for giving Krishna consciousness to ourselves? Should there be a balance, or can the mood and act of giving compensate for our own lacking? Great point. I like that point.
Really good point. Really good point. Yeah, I think there's a type of preaching that we do when we're preaching because we have a natural inspiration and it's an outpouring.
Right. Overflowing.
An overflow, distribution of overflow.
Yeah.
And I think there's a type of preaching where we're doing it and we know that we're not 100% feeling it, but we're thinking, I'll do this and I'll get purified through it. And then I think there's a third type of preaching where we're preaching and we're trying to get results because those results will then make up for the internal vacuum that we're experiencing in our own spiritual development. So having a number of a project that you did makes up for your inner lacking of spiritual development, and you think, I'm doing good in Krishna consciousness. But actually your preaching is just being used as a substitute for your spiritual vacuum. And that's dangerous,
right.
Because it's not sustainable.
Right.
Prabhupada said, all of your service and all of your responsibilities and all of your preaching work, if you don't have good hearing and chanting, then eventually it will become a big burden. So, you know, Sanatan Goswami, he glorifies Haridas Thakur. He says, Achar prachar karaha karaha dui kariya tumi sarva guru tumi jagatera arya. He says, some people have very, very good achar, personal practice, but they don't do prachar, they don't preach. And some people prachar, they preach, but they don't, they're not developing themselves. But you, Haridas, you have both. Therefore, tumi sarva guru tumi, you're the spiritual master of all the worlds.
Wow.
So, achar and prachar have to go hand in hand, you know.
That's a great point about Haridas Thakur.
I don't know if you ever went to the Govardhan Palace. Did you ever go there? To the place where they do BBT?
Yeah.
You've been to that, right?
Yeah.
So when Gopi Paranadam Prabhu was there, in his room, he used to have this quote of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And I'm just trying to remember that quote now.
I think I know what you're talking about.
You know the quote, you know, if your inside and outside is not the same, then...
close the door and go preach to yourself.
Yeah. I thought it was just such a profound...
Madhavananda Prabhu posted it a little while ago, and I love that quote. Beautiful quote. That's right. I'd like to find that again.
Yeah, I'll just show you. It's here, yeah. He says, on the quote, it says, do not hear from the mouths of persons lacking proper conduct. If your conduct is below par, you should not publicly preach about the Lord. Close the door and preach to yourself. Bhajan really begins when one's outside and inside are the same.
Just like, wow.
I mean, when you hear that, you think, all right, guys, just pack it all up now. Let's go back to the deep bag, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
obviously, as I said, there's that second type of preaching where you're aware that, you know, I'm not fully experiencing Krishna consciousness, but I'm preaching and I'm developing. And I think that middle space is still genuine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Shanta Vigraha is right. You know, when we get into that place where it's a substitute, your preaching becomes a substitute for your own internal development.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's connected to what we kind of touched on before about how perhaps a lot of the reason why devotees maybe about a bit reticent about preaching or sharing Krishna consciousness is because perhaps it was done not in a balanced way, you know, in the past.
Right.
We damaged people out there by being overzealous and insensitive and just not acting as a gentleman and gentle ladies. And probably maybe preaching was also done in a disproportionate way and it harmed people's own spiritual life, you know. And so like that leaves some scars, you know. And then we think like when you think of the word, I do know devotees who would never go out on book distribution again.
Because yeah, I'm sort of like that.
Yeah, because it was just, it was maybe forced or it was maybe too much or it just, it doesn't leave good memories, you know?
Yeah, I'm trying to get over that somehow.
Yeah, so it's definitely something, it's not just doing it, but it's doing it in the right way and doing it with love. And
yeah.
One thing one devotee once said to me, which really kind of shifted the way I operated, is he said, you love to preach, but do you love the people you're preaching to? And it was kind of a simple point, but it was just like, I started thinking like, yeah, I love to preach, but do I love the people I'm preaching to? Because there's a sea of difference between that.
Yeah, that's not something that we're taught when we're, I mean, at least I wasn't when we went on book distribution, like kind of these like really nuanced points about what your mindset should be like when you're approaching someone or, you know, that's important because that's how, you know, your outcome is going to be according to like what you're thinking and what your motivations are. Or if your motivation is just, you know, I want to tell my Bhakta leader that I did 20 Bhagavad Gitas, or was it that I need to connect with 20 people and at the same time really care about these people because the main point is that we're trying to connect people with Krishna and not just the numbers or not just how many books go out. So very important point. Yeah, I really like that. Okay. Another friend of ours.
Just one beautiful story Ramai Swami tells.
Sure.
Prabhupada was in Australia, and in Australia, things are miles apart. So when they wanted to go out on a morning walk, 6 o'clock in the morning, they would have to drive Prabhupada to the park. So they had to take a motorway to get to the park. Wow. So they got on the motorway at 6 o'clock, and there was a traffic jam. So Prabhupada's sitting in the back. Prabhupada looks at his watch and he looks at Ramai Swami and he says, there's a traffic jam? It's 6 o'clock in the morning. Why is there a traffic jam? So Ramai Swami looks at Prabhupada and he says, Prabhupada, in Australia, people live so far away from their workplace that they have to often drive for 2 hours, spend a whole day at work, and then come back 2 hours later, sit in the traffic. Prabhupada's hearing all of this, and Ramai Swami looks at Prabhupada and he sees a teardrop fall from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada says, they're working so hard, but for what?
Wow.
And one of the devotees was reflecting that, you know, we would look out of the car and say, you know, thank God it's not me, you know.
Right.
Thank God I escaped that life, you know, like thank God I found, you know, a better way to live. But Prabhupada was looking at it and he was just, he exuded that such compassion.
It's reminding me of that story of when Prabhupada was on a walk and he saw some old men golfing and he probably said, what are they doing? And they said, Prabhupada, they're golfing. It's like a game. And he started to cry or was really upset, you know, they're just this is like the end of their life and they're just like wasting it playing a game.
Yeah.
So he was really affected by, you know, seeing that.
Yeah.
Nandagopal Prabhu has a question. When you get into preaching, magic happens. Sutta Prabhu, please share your most magical personal experience when preaching Krishna consciousness. I know you shared something. I don't think anything can top that, but if you could share something else, I'm sure you
have all kinds of things happen. You know, like humorous things happen, deep emotional things happen. You know, sometimes it doesn't always have to even be something amazing that happens. It's just a moment where you connect with someone.
Yeah.
You know, like I've been on the street and I've stopped someone and we just enter a really deep conversation. And it's almost like the whole world stops around you. And it's just you and this person. And it's very, very like an emotional thing. So, yeah, I guess many stories are there. Like another story on book distribution is once we were in a place called Norwich. So I was distributing books and I was having a really hard time. And, you know, in my mind, I was thinking like, there's so many people out here and I just want to preach to all of them and I want to just give all of them the message. I can't even give one book out or three books out. I want to preach in a mass way. So this thought was going on in my mind and I was thinking even I shouldn't even be out here on the street because even if it is working, I'm only giving one book at a time. I want to preach to everyone and here I am. I can't even give one book out. Anyways, I'm having such a hard time. So what I decided to do is start doing American accents, you know? Well, I mean, it's one of those confessions. I, you know, my American accent isn't that good, you know? But I started talking to people and I was like, hey, yo, how's it going, man? I'm from Miami. I'm just here to, like, give out some books on meditation and, like, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, halfway through my speech, I'm going into, like, British English and then American because I can't hold it. But anyway, I just had to break my mental block.
Sure, sure.
So I'm doing these American accents and I stop someone, right? And I'm like, yo, I'm from Miami. But anyway, so I'm speaking to this guy and, like, so he gets really interested. So I continue speaking in this American accent and he's asking good questions. Now it's like 5 minutes into the conversation and you know, my mouth is getting a bit dry because I'm doing this artificial accent. But in my mind, I'm thinking I can't go into a British accent now because he's just going to think I'm fake.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I can't change it now. He won't trust me. So I'm just like, I have to carry on. I have this half an hour discussion with him as an American monk. He takes the books. And then he comes to me and he pulls out his business card. And he goes, I work for BBC Norwich. The broadcasting, BBC Norwich. And he goes, you're the most interesting person I've met today. I want you to come on my radio show. Tomorrow morning. And I got the recording of this, by the way. He says, I want you to come on my radio show tomorrow morning. I'm like, it was bad enough speaking to this guy on the street for half an hour and as a monk from Miami. And now I'm going to have to go on public radio and be a monk from Miami with this guy who's going to, you know, like you're interviewing me. So the next morning, I went on to this BBC in Norwich, and there I was, you know, the monk.
No, you spoke an accent?
Yeah, I did it, yeah. Actually, I had no choice.
Wow.
So here I was on BBC Radio Norwich, the monk from Miami. And then I was just going back because just before I had stopped him, in my mind, I was thinking, Krishna, I want to speak to the masses. I don't want to just speak to the person. And there it was. Krishna just reciprocated, you know. So
that's an amazing story. Wow.
Yeah, all these different things happen and Mahaprabhu just becomes so active, you know. It's a beautiful feeling.
That's amazing. Question, when marrying the mission and we renounce certain relationships like friends, family, or even the day job, what important factors should we consider before diving deep within ourselves?
Yeah, I think just that marrying the mission, I think one thing we just have to clarify is that your friends, your family, and even your day job can be also be part of the mission.
Integration.
Yeah, integration, you know. Like I was doing a talk a few months ago and I asked everyone like, put your hand up if you had an argument with someone in the last week. And so some people put their hand up and said, put your hand up if you had an argument with a Vaishnava in the last week. And one person didn't put his hand up. And I said, you didn't have an argument with any devotee, you know, in the last week? He goes, no, I had an argument with my wife, but no devotees. I'm like, your wife's a devotee. How can you say? He goes, no, that's my wife. She's not. You asked me if I had an argument with a devotee.
Right.
Like, your wife's a devotee. So it was just an interesting point because, you know, sometimes we just think family, mundane. Job, mundane. You know, this, mundane.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that sphere, that's part of the mission. Yeah. It's part of the mission of, you know, sharing Krishna consciousness. Charity begins at home as well. So when I'm talking about, you know, there's also a stereotyped image of the mission, you know, like, you know, the orange Sankirtan van, you know, arrives in the middle of the town and then the doors open and like 25 Hare Krishnas jump out, you know, and they blitz the town, you know, it's like the mission.
Right.
The mission, most simply, is to bring however many people we can closer to Krishna. You may preach, you know. It's nice in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu gives different instructions to different individuals. So what he says to Srivas Thakur, Srivas is disappearing today, he says, my instruction to you is go back to Navadvip and hold kirtans in your house every single day. And then he says to Advaita Acharya, my instruction to you is go back to Navadvip and Shantipur and share Krishna consciousness there. And Nityananda Prabhu, my instruction to you is to go into Bengal and share Krishna consciousness there. And it's such a beautiful thing because it's not like, oh, Nityananda is on the mission, but Srivas is just doing kirtan in his home. No, it's all part of the mission.
Right, right.
So we only have to find our realm. So when we're talking about marrying the mission, let's not make the mistake of, you know, perhaps maybe some of the problems previously in our movement where the mission was so stereotyped that the things which were closer to home that are also part of the mission maybe got neglected.
Great point. Okay, here we go. Forgive the question, maybe it's too personal, but I'm curious what Sutapa Das's family is thinking about his decision. I wanted to know that too. It's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, naturally for your, you know, I tried Mahaprabhu's line on my mother, you know, like, Mom, are we supposed to go out and get the wealth, you know, come back and bring the wealth back? When I first joined the temple, it was so, yeah, it was difficult for my parents, you know.
Right.
It was... you know, it went through all the stages, you know. First it was anger, and then it was tears, and then it was reconciliation and compromise. It was a difficult time. It was a very emotional time in my life. I think what's happened with my parents over time is that I think they've grown to accept and appreciate, actually, yeah, what I do. I've been a monk now for 20 years, so I think they're used to it somewhat now.
Sure.
I think part of their maybe opposition to Krishna consciousness in the beginning, a lot of it was to do with me as well, and how I presented Krishna consciousness, and maybe I wasn't the best specimen of Krishna consciousness. And in terms of sannyas, to be honest, I've not told them about sannyas.
Oh my goodness, really?
I don't know if I'll see this podcast or not. But I sense with my parents that maybe it wouldn't be such a difference to what I'm doing now.
Right.
Like, I think for them it wouldn't be so much different to what I'm doing now.
Right.
As a sannyasi, you know, sannyasis do also, you know, encourage their parents and assist them in times of need if that may be there. So that hard line is not there. Sometimes you find in many traditions of renunciation that it can be a very hard cut. There are traditions of renunciation where, you know, after taking something like sannyas, you would never see your parents again. You'd not, what to speak of seeing them, you wouldn't even be able to allow to engage in conversation about, you know, about what they're doing or any such things. But yeah, in Mahaprabhu's line, in the Gaudiya line, in the sannyas that Srila Prabhupada has given, there's it's not so much about a hardline renunciation. So yeah. I guess if the time would come, then I'd have that conversation with them and explain what it means.
I hope you do. What is Sutta Prabhu's most successful method of book distribution?
I think it's about a personal connection. One thing that they always told me when I started going out on book distribution is that they don't necessarily buy the book. 5% will buy the book. 95% people will buy you. They buy it to you. And so I realized on the street when I was genuine, when I was without ulterior motive, when I was relatable, when I, was a little bit charming, when I employed some nice ways in which to connect with them through humor and other things. When you build personal connection with people, then we're able to take them somewhere, and so yeah, it's I don't think there's a, there's this story of like a man who had a jacket on. So the wind thought, I'm going to like get the jacket off that man. So the wind began to blow like anything, trying to like rip this jacket off this person. And as the wind began to blow, the person just began to tighten up their jacket more and more and more. And then the sun came out and the sun said, I'll get his jacket off. And the sun was shone.
That's a great story.
The sun just, it was just shining. And then the man just went like, just opened up,
Right.
So that's when I go out on the street, I try to be like,
warm.
Give a little bit of sunshine, give a little bit of a ray of hope.
Love it.
Give a little bit of the light of Krishna consciousness. But yeah, just be genuine, be real, be nice, and be concerned. One devotee used to tell me, Sankirtan book distribution really begins at the point on the street when you realize I have nothing to take from these people. I've only come to give.
Wow.
That's the point at which real book distribution begins. Anything before that is purification or we're doing it out of duty. Real sharing of Krishna consciousness begins when we're only concerned in giving and not taking from anyone.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love that. Okay. Oh, this is cool to mention. Shruti Dharma Prabhu once told me, build the people and the people will build temple. Great point.
Yeah, caring for the people and people make projects.
What can you say are mistakes you have made in your path that you can advise us not to make on our path to marrying the mission?
I think one of those things that I mentioned was the quantitative and the qualitative. And I saw in my life how it could become very quantitative about doing big things, but we lose the vision of one-to-one connection with people.
Yeah.
And so I think always while you're trying to do the big mission, always have individual devotees that you're helping and actually concerned about. Try to be on the ground and have human contact with people so that it becomes more personal. Otherwise, the mission can just become about the numbers and the big accolades and the achievements, and it loses its heart you know, the heart. Indra Prabhu wrote that book, right? The Heart of Transcendental Book Distribution.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's definitely one thing. I think another thing is on the path of pursuing the mission, we have to become very close to Krishna. We have to be able to also deliver the goods, deliver the real thing to people. And that means we have to be genuine in our spiritual life. We have to be genuine in what we're experiencing. And sometimes in the spirit of mission, we don't spend enough time on developing that genuine Krishna consciousness within ourselves. And also another thing is that we need that genuine spirituality so that when we're engaged in the mission, we're able to not become affected by that. Like I give you an example, in the Mahabharata, you have Abhimanyu. So Abhimanyu is like this incredible archer. Like he's incredible. He knows how to penetrate any phalanx, yeah, any formation.
Yeah.
Now, when Abhimanyu penetrated the Kaurava phalanx, you know, that formation.
Chakravyuha, yeah.
Chakravyuha. Now, what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains is he says that Abhimanyu had the knowledge of how to penetrate it. He had the knowledge of how to fight within it. But what he didn't have the knowledge of was how to come out unscathed. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, the preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement may be ingenious in reaching people, in going into any situation, in even speaking and connecting people. But the question will remain is that are they able to then come out of that situation and with their own spiritual consciousness intact?
Wow. Great point.
I don't know when you were in Vrindavan, if you ever did like kabaddi. Did you ever do you?
No, I didn't. No, but I know what it is.
You know what it is, right? So the idea is that, you know, like these people are like circling you and then you're supposed to like tag them. But when you go to tag them, there's always the danger that they might, you know, so you're supposed to tag them and then get out. So it's kind of like that.
Right.
You know? Yeah. This is what we're trying to do, you know? So. Yeah. I guess those are a few things, and they could be
more. Sure. All right, we're going to step it up a little bit because we're running out of time, but I'm going to choose some questions that I like here. You have a book. So Sudha Prabhu is an author as well. So any upcoming books, someone's asking?
Yeah, we're trying to do a new book on the Gita.
Oh, okay.
And the tagline for it is wisdom that breathes. And what I'm really kind of trying to do with that book is, I guess, bring out many of the philosophical points of the Gita, mm-hmm. but then bring in many, many practical meditations and exercises and thought experiments and self-introspective stuff that devotees can do to try to kind of implant those principles into a deeper space within their consciousness, you know?
Right.
But sometimes I think we read a lot of philosophy, but in terms of turning it into vigyan or realization and going through that process of really churning it and making it a reality, perhaps there could be more that we could share with devotees in order to help that process happen. So yeah, I guess that's something we're working on at the moment. And another book, which is just about the internal journey of bhakti. So mm-hmm. what we'll do is we'll take like Madhurya Kadambini, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and we'll take like a Shastric framework of how the development of bhakti within one's heart, what happens on that journey. But then we'll bring in a lot of practical thing of the experiences that we have in, you know, the 21st century world and how it relates to that classical framework of the acharyas.
Right. Wow, very cool. I think we can end on this question because this is cool. See if I can find it again. A lot of appreciation, a lot of good questions. Okay, here. What do you see as the next step for the mission? It's a good concluding point, I guess you can make.
Again, the mission is broad, and ISKCON in different places is at different stages of development. What may be the next stage of development in London may be different from New Jersey. That's where you're at, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, New Jersey, or, you know, I don't know, Mexico or whatever. Again, I'm going to come back to the same thing, and maybe Chirag or Nandagopa, he knows me well. Like, I don't talk so much about strategy. I'm not so much of a strategist, but I try to be a person of spirit. And my firm conviction is that when spirit is there, when the inspiration is there, then the strategy and the how and the what, it will work out. I'm sure it will work out, but the spirit has to be there. Mm. And so I think the next step for the mission, the next step for ISKCON, the next step for all of us, myself included, is to just try and capture this spirit more and more, because it's so much, for me, it's so much the spirit which embodies who Srila Prabhupada is. The spirit of someone who, you know, just came down and came down to the Lower East Side, you know, to give Krishna consciousness. And yeah, I'll end with a story maybe.
Sure.
You know, Brahmananda Prabhu was such an amazing personality. And I'm sure yourself in Vrindavan, you had opportunity to connect with him.
I connected with him in New York, actually, when he came back from Vrindavan to renew his visa or something. Or I was serving him there. I connected with him quite deeply, actually. Amazing devotee.
Yeah, so I think he was either giving a class or he was giving an offering on the Vyasasana or something. And he was talking about Srila Prabhupada with the love that he has for Srila Prabhupada. One person in the audience put their hand up and they said, Brahmananda Prabhu, Brahmananda Prabhu, the way you speak about Srila Prabhupada, to us it seems that for you, Srila Prabhupada is God. So Brahmananda Prabhu paused and he said, No. We made that mistake, because at a certain point in the movie.
There's that story, yeah.
So he said, No. We made that mistake. But Prabhupada is, we don't think Prabhupada is God. And then he paused again and he said, but you know, nowadays, I think Prabhupada is greater than God. Because Prabhupada came down to the Lower East Side to save me. And then he just broke down crying.
Wow, beautiful.
And in that moment, it was just like, Prabhupada came down to the Lower East Side. And, you know, the East Village Voice, which was the hippie newspaper at that time, the devotees came to Prabhupada with the East Village Voice, which was describing Prabhupada in the Lower East Side. And they read out the article. And it said, and one old man, a few months past his 70, wandered into New York's East Village and convinced the world's toughest audience, bohemians, potheads, acid heads, and hippies, that he knew the way to God. Turn off, sing out, and fall in. This new brand of holy man has brought a type of consciousness expansion that's sweeter than acid, cheaper than pot, and non-bustable by fuzz. Wow. They were great writers, and Prabhupada's listening to all of this, and then Prabhupada just pauses for thought and he goes, very nice. They have explained in their own words.
Beautiful.
It was such a nice. So I feel, for me, the next step of the mission, which will always be the most important part of the mission, is just imbibing the complete sense of compassion and selflessness and desire to give Krishna to as many people as possible that Srila Prabhupada had. And I think when that spirit is there, then all the magic will happen.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, that's the kind of the end here.
Yeah.
It was so fascinating to talk to you again and to get your viewpoints and your experiences, Prabhu. Thank you. And I wish you the best of luck in your upcoming sannyas entrance into that ashram. I'm very excited for what you have in the future. And I think everyone will agree with me when I say that I feel that you're part of ISKCON there in England is in good hands if you're one of the leaders, and we really appreciate that. And I personally want to thank you for that.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your service. I'll have to find in another podcast for my exercise listening tomorrow.
There's a few this week.
So no, thank you for your service. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Wishing you the best, and look forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you, Prabhu. If someone wants to get in touch with you, could they email you?
Yeah, we have a website, tattva.kks@hotmail.com, and there's a website, tattva.co.uk. So if anyone...
Oh, really? Tattva.co.uk.
UK, yeah, and there's like books you can download for free and other stuff. So yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, well, thank you again, Sutapa Prabhu, for joining me on this fantastic, inspiring podcast episode for us to marry the mission. You know, a lot to think about. So also, the late morning program, we're having another episode tomorrow with Gaura Nataraj Prabhu. We're going to be talking about fasting. I actually fasted for 7 days recently under his guidance, and I want to kind of share my experience and also ask him different questions about fasting and things. So it's going to be a really interesting conversation. Tune in tomorrow at the same time, 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can hear that conversation. Prabhu, stay online. I'm just going to turn off the live. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please like and subscribe to the channel on YouTube and Facebook, and have a great rest of your evening. Hari Bol.